Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know it's kind of early in this show, but if you're not laughing already, here's some inspiration from Anderson Cooper.
I'm not going to let you do this on this. All right. I'm so stupid. It's really so stupid.
Yeah, but then you got to get it back in. Ladies and gentlemen, some news of Musk love as we start the program. Owners of Tesla's Cybertruck, you've seen them, haven't you? Not the owners, the Cybertrucks, are reporting that a software update enabling full self-driving, FSD, has become an option for their, as they register, the British Tech Journal describes them, giant rolling wedges of stainless steel. And that's a compliment. A post on the Cybertruck Owners Club forum indicated some lucky Cybertruck owners received an over-the-air software update, which included an early access build of fully self-driving version 12.5.5. That's the good version, isn't it? Multiple users reported receiving the update. Videos of purported FSD cruises in this Cybertruck have since appeared. Now, just in case the looks of the vehicle aren't enough for you, the Cybertruck has been found to rust, jam fingers, and have a flaw that can mean its accelerator becomes stuck. Automotive safety experts have been especially critical of the vehicle's shape and excessive weight, which they've suggested make it unsafe for pedestrians, cyclists, and other motorists. Who else is on the road? Anybody? A recent report about all of Tesla's full self-driving offers another reason to worry about self-driving Cybertrucks. That report came from automotive research firm AMCI Testing. They last week published research that it claimed is the most extensive real-world test of Tesla's FSD ever conducted by an independent third party, covering more than 1,000 miles of real-world driving. Real-world, that's the one we live in? I don't think so. While Tesla's FSD's performance was, quote, impressive for a uniquely camera-based system, that means it doesn't have LiDAR, the report continues, our drivers had to intervene over 75 times during the evaluation, an average of once every 13 miles. So if you drive 12 miles or less, you're in business. The researchers described FSD's performance as being surprisingly capable, especially in the first few minutes of a drive. Quote, the confidence and often competence with which FSD undertakes complex driving tasks lulls users into believing that it is a thinking machine with its decisions and performance based on a sophisticated assessment of risk, AMCI said. But errors are frequent, the firm warned, and when they occur, they're often, quote, sudden, dramatic, and dangerous. In those circumstances, the report continued, it is unlikely that the driver without their hands on the wheel will be able to intervene in time to prevent an accident or possibly a fatality, unquote. But it looks so different. Hello, welcome to the show.
Well, when the trash man scratches your back, do you like it? Does the hip lip make you trip, or do you fight it? Well, do you tend to get the jingles in the jungle? Well, do you find that you're afraid of the maze? Well, when the man with the plan put the money in your hand, do you hear a little whisper and you say, you better back away. Ha, ha, ha. You better back away. Scratch your back, do you like it? Does the hip lip make you trip, or do you fight it? Well, do you tend to get the jingles in the jungle? Do you find that you're afraid of the maze? Well, when the man with the plan put the money in your hand, do you feel a little whisper when you say, you better back away. Ha, ha, ha. You better back away.
From New Orleans, Louisiana. Yes, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. Say, the progress that we may be making on climate change, regarding climate change, may be checkmated by the activities of private equity firms. They are using U.S. public sector workers' retirement savings to invest in fossil fuel projects, pumping more than a billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere every year. This is reported by The Guardian. It's a report from a couple of private organizations we'll name in a moment. The private equity firms have plowed more than $1 trillion into the energy sector over the last 14 years. They often buy into old and new fossil fuel projects, and thanks to exemptions from financial disclosures, operate them outside the public eye. Or the private eye. No, the public eye. In many cases, they're mortgaging workers' futures by taking the money they've put away for old age and investing it in assets that risk serious damage to the climate, according to the report. The firms involved in making the report: Americans for Financial Reform Education Fund, Global Energy Monitor, and Private Equity Stakeholder Project. They assess the... Sure, you've heard of them. They assess the holdings of 21 private equity firms, overseeing a combined $6 trillion in assets under management. The analysis found that the 21 firms were funding projects responsible for releasing more than 1.17 billion tons of carbon dioxide a year, just in a year. The research was compiled from financial data services company websites, press releases, and news reports, It was limited to three categories: investments, upstream, fossil gas terminals and coal plants, and so doesn't represent the firm's entire emissions footprints from energy investment. The second highest overall emitter was the Carlyle Group. You may have heard of them. Estimated 214 million tons of CO2 annually. Its 23 fossil fuel company holdings represented more than three-quarters of its energy portfolio. The report traces a trend of private equity firms swooping in like a regular hawk, as the large oil and gas firms started shedding older and dirtier assets, and the bigger banks increasingly regard those facilities as risky investments. Well, what do they know? Thanks to limited disclosure rules, regulatory loopholes, and complex corporate structures, we love those, some of the dirtiest assets have come to be owned by relatively obscure investment outfits, according to the report. And as if that wasn't enough, there are the cost-cutting measures for which the private equity world has long been notorious. That has led to an increasingly dangerous situation, introducing further safety hazards, reliability concerns, and environmental violations. That's all. Private equity serving you by serving themselves. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Say it with me now.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't say it. An independent panel is calling for President Biden to take disciplinary action against the inspector general at the Department of Homeland Security, is all. His name is Joseph V. Cufari, Jr. I don't know about senior. Don't ask. The steps recommended by the panel include firing him, maybe. They say he misled the Senate during his nomination process, and he committed other misconduct during his 5 years in office. The Integrity Committee of the Council of the Inspectors General on Integrity and Efficiency... Yes, it sounds redundant, but it also sounds repetitive. Found that Cufari, a Trump appointee, who knew, failed to disclose the Senate before it confirmed him in July 2019 that the Department of Justice Inspector General's office had found 6 years earlier that he ran afoul of ethics rules and misled investigators. He then was working as an investigator in the DOJ Inspector General's small Tucson office. Officials recommended a deeper investigation into Cufari that ended when he retired way back in 2013, aware that he was facing a potentially career-ending probe. The Integrity Committee, in case you wondered, is made up of government watchdogs at other federal agencies. They said Cufari misinformed lawmakers when he filled out a Senate questionnaire during the confirmation process, depriving them of vital information before his nomination sailed through the Senate. He was appointed by then-President Trump. The Senate questionnaire asked Cufari if he had come under investigation during his career. He answered that the DOJ Inspector General's office staff had, quote, interviewed me, unquote, about his actions in a federal civil rights case. He provided wrongfully inaccurate and misleading information during his nomination process when he failed to describe the true facts and circumstances surrounding his departure from federal employment as a special agent with law enforcement authority, said the Integrity Committee in a nearly 1,000-page report and a letter addressed to, remember President Biden? Yeah, to him. Cufari's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. He had earlier filed an unsuccessful federal lawsuit to block the investigation, calling it unfounded. Well, wouldn't they find that out? And reportedly refused to cooperate or provide documents to investigators, delaying the probe for more than 3 years. So they couldn't find out if it was unfounded. because he confounded them. News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this program. Next on this broadcast, news of AI. By the way, I've asked Claude, the chatbot owned by a company called Anthropic, to write an introductory jingle for news about AI. You'll hear it next week. Claude will too. Meantime, coding assistants have been an obvious early use case in the AI gold rush, but promised productivity improvements are falling short of the mark, if they exist at all. This is a report from CIO, not the old labor union, not those days. Many developers say AI coding assistants make them more productive, but this recent study set forth to measure their output and found no significant gains. According to UpLevel, a company that provides insights from coding and collaboration data, they compared the output of about 800 developers using Copilot, that's, I believe, a Microsoft AI, over a three-month period to their output in a three-month period before adoption. In addition to measuring productivity, the study looked at factors in developer burnout, and it found that Copilot hasn't helped there either. The amount of working time spent outside of standard hours decreased for both the control group and the test group. It decreased more when the developers weren't using the AI Copilot. This study was driven by curiosity over gains of major productivity gains as AI coding assistants become ubiquitous. Quote, we've seen different studies of people saying this is really helpful for our productivity. That's Matt Hoffman, product manager and data analyst at UpLevel. He continues, we've also seen some people saying, you know what? I'm kind of having to be more of a code reviewer. Unquote. A representative of Copilot didn't have a comment on the study. But there's more news of AI. Gotta be. It's so happening. Anthropic, that is to say, the company that owns Claude, the GPT that is writing my AI theme, has hired another of OpenAI's founders. Now, OpenAI is the company that invented chatbots. ChatGPT was their first product, and it caught fire a couple years ago, as you may remember. And this week, two things happened to OpenAI. They raised $6 billion from investors who think that's going to be the future. And they lost another one of their founders. Anthropic, as I say, the parent of Claude, brought on a founder named Dirk Kingma. Gosh, Silicon Valley has great names. Dirk Kingma. This came after fellow OpenAI co-founder John Schulman left the lab in August to join Anthropic. Kingman revealed his news in a post on X, saying he was excited to join Anthropic because he believes in its approach to developing AI. That is a frequent refrain among the growing throng of OpenAI heavyweights who have left for the competition, according to the Register. Anthropic was formed in 2021 by ex-OpenAI and Google staff. It strives to provide artificial intelligence in a safe manner. I guess that's what they like. Like OpenAI, Anthropic offers a family of models. Oh, now I'm excited. No. GPT models. Quote, I'm looking forward to contributing to Anthropic's mission of developing powerful AI systems responsibly, Kingma posted. Can't wait to work with their talented team. Unquote. Only two of OpenAI's 11 founders are still associated with the AI house that is owned by Microsoft. And now a new feature on the program. And this introductory melody wasn't written by AI. So don't blame it.
The memory hole. The memory hole. Each thing you remember's a dying ember in the memory hole. Forgetting's a goal. In the memory hole. No one's to blame if you lost the name.
You can get your hands dirty digging in the memory hole, and I have this week a couple of items that might interest you. First of all, you know that the Secretary General of Hezbollah, the Lebanese, yeah, let's call him a terrorist group, was assassinated, and there were reports, later denied, that he would be buried in Iraq. Now, he was, when he was alive, in Lebanon. He was sponsored by Iran. But there was a report, as I say, later denied, but we don't know yet. I don't think he's been buried yet. He's not walking around, we know that, but that he would be buried in Iraq. Now, why would an agent of Iran be buried in Iraq? Well, the memory hole tells us that Iran and Iraq fought a 10-year-long war against each other in the 1980s. They were deadly enemies. So what would have made them patch it up to the point where an Iranian operative would even be rumored or reported to be buried in Iraq? What brought those two nations together? Well, if we look in the memory hole, there was a war against Iraq in 2003 based on what were at the time reported by credible operatives in three different countries, all in the nuclear anti-proliferation intelligence offices of their countries, that Iraq had no nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction, contradicting the then assurances of Dick Cheney, who's in the news this week for another reason. And it was the weakening of Iraq and the killing of its former dictator that made it possible for Iran to kind of swoop in and have major influence, let's put it that way, even to the point of maybe burying one of their leaders there. We'll have to see where he ends up. Also in the memory hole this week, and also involving an endorser of Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, the former president of the United States, hailed by many in the news media and in politics as the greatest political orator of our generation, of our time. And even though some speculated that he may have been superseded in that role by his wife at the Democratic convention recently, he was, of course, a notable political orator. I note him for the statement he made during his administration when reports continued to filter out of war crimes being committed by American intelligence and military during that Iraq war. There were questions as to whether those people would be prosecuted since there are laws against war crimes. Still on the books, but they got rid of the books. And his answer was, it wasn't so what. It was two words longer. It was, we tortured some folks.
You gotta remember, we were really afraid. We'd ignored the warnings, and then we got played. There was panic in the White House, panic at state, panic at the Pentagon. People working really late. They were patriots. They cared and they fought. What the contractors sold, they bought. So we rendered some Arabs with the help of the blokes. And like it or not, we tortured some folks. Now, we didn't think it was torture per se. That's what the White House counsel said back in the day. Enhanced interrogation is how it was known. So we slapped and waterboarded and froze to the bone. Sure, it violated our values and laws. But we were more scared than when we first saw Jaws. Some very good men did some very bad things. But who among us knows why the caged bird sings? So we tormented some Muslims, then went out for some smokes. It hurts to say it, but we tortured some folks. Now we could look backwards. We could game the blame. We could point fingers. We could wallow in shame. We could punish the guilty for each little flaw, as we're supposed to do under international law. We could say we're sorry, which we never do, because we're exceptional. And so are you. So let's leave it at this. Let's leave it unseen. Let's look to the future and wipe the slate clean. You don't want to pursue this. Neither do I. It would be like busting me now because I used to get high. So let's pretend we don't hear the screams and the croaks and just tell our grandkids. We tortured some folks. No jokes.
From New Orleans, this is the show. And now, news of the godly. Dateline Phoenix, two Arizona men are facing up to life in prison. A jury found them guilty this week of aiding and participating in a polygamous child sex abuse ring connected to a breakaway sect from the Mormon Church. It held sway over 3 years across multiple states. Liddell Bistlein Jr., he's a member of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a disavowed offshoot of the Mormon Church that still practices polygamy, transported his two minor daughters and nearly half a dozen other young girls across state lines to marry self-proclaimed prophet of the church, Samuel Rappy Lee Bateman, in Colorado City, Arizona. Not Arizona City, Colorado. Bateman regularly raped his 10 child brides, two of whom were as young as 9 when he married them, and 10 when he raped them, in the name of spiritual atonement. Bistlein Jr. watched sometimes on a video call, and at least one time in person, as Bateman had sex with children, according to the evidence presented throughout the trial. The jury found him guilty of 8 total charges, including transporting a minor for sexual activity and receipt of child porn. Prosecutors say Torrance Bistline gave large financial gifts, including luxury vehicles, to Bateman to promote his religious mission, and anally raped a 13-year-old bride of Bateman's in one of Bateman's atonement ceremonies. And the group of Catholic dioceses declaring bankruptcy has a new member this week. Vermont's Catholic Church has filed for bankruptcy protection. It faces more than 30 lawsuits alleging child sex abuse by clergy decades ago, according to a filing this week in federal court, reported by the Associated Press. Since 2006, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, the state's only diocese, has settled 67 lawsuits, a total of $34 million. That's according to Bishop John McDermott. 20 of those suits were settled after the legislature a couple years ago got rid of the statute of limitations. The diocese faces 31 more lawsuits. A 2019 report released by the diocese found there were, quote, credible and substantiated allegations of the sexual abuse, unquote, of minors against 40 priests in the state since 1950. All but one of those allegations occurred prior to 2000. None of the priests was still in ministry. Most of the priests who were named in the report, yeah, they did. They did. They got away with it. The bigger way. To pay the settlements going back to 2006, the diocese, which currently employs approximately 54 people, says the AP, is selling or has sold church property, received some insurance funds. How do you insure against that? And more recently used its investments and operating funds. I hope they're not investing in fossil fuels. That would be too convenient for this program. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen.
Direct from Mar-a-Lago, safest place in the world for top secret presidential documents. I'm your favorite ex-president with another episode of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Coffee. No annoying taste, just caffeine. This week, the fake news media went into super fake overdrive over two words supposedly spoken by a certain Donald Trump in a fake conversation that probably didn't happen 4 years ago. Those words were in reaction to the news that fake Vice President Mike Pence was being taken to safety during the peaceful protest at the Capitol on January 6. The words supposedly were, "So what?" And the phony media have gone on a mad rampage suggesting there was something wrong about that wordiology. If the news media like news so much, I've got news for them. "So what" is very much appropriated in so many situations you face in the Oval Office, unless you're one of those Marxist, fascist, communists like Kambula who think the president can solve every problem without even having time for golf. Russia invades Ukraine? So what? Israel kills some Arabs? So what? It's getting hotter? So what? It's getting colder? So much the same what? As your favorite president, I focused on the problems that could be solved. I know you remember them. At the moment, I don't. But nobody has ever seen the likes of the problem-solving I did, and I will do again if the same problems rise up. But as we all know, some problems just can't be solved. About them, I say, I could care less. By which I mean, I couldn't care less. Or more, for that matter. So the next time you hear the fake anything criticize me for that fake quote, just keep in mind three words. So freaking what? Thanks for listening. Buy some stuff. So long.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Bread. So soft you can cut it with a spoon. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the atom.
Clean Safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
You see how all the stuff we cover on this show, me and Anderson, are ultimately interrelated. So for AI, which needs an awful lot of electricity, and for crypto, which needs an awful lot of electricity, an awful lot, there are now proposals to reopen some nuclear plants that have already closed down. I've shared this with you before. The company involved is Holtec, which is usually busied with tearing down nuclear plants, but wants to restart the Palisades reactor in Michigan. Oh, no, but they found corrosion cracking in steam generators that far exceeded estimates. That's according to the U.S. nuclear regulator this week. The administration this week finalized a $1.5 billion conditional loan guarantee to the plant, part of the effort to support nuclear energy to curb climate change and to help satisfy that rising demand. Palisades shut under a different owner way back in 2022. It's seeking to be the first modern U.S. nuclear plant to reopen after being fully shut, according to Reuters. A summary of an early September call between the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and Holtec, published this week, said indications of stress corrosion cracking, I have that in my voice sometimes, in tubes in both of Palisades' steam generators, quote, far exceeded estimates based on previous operating history, unquote. It found 1,163 steam generator tubes had indications of the stress cracking. I blame the tubes. There are more than 16,000 of them in the units. Steam generators are sensitive components. They require meticulous maintenance. They're among the most expensive units at a nuclear power station. Holtec wants to return the plant to operation late next year. The results of the inspections, according to a company spokesperson, were not entirely unpredicted, as the standard system layup process or procedure for maintaining the units was not followed when the plant shut down. But he says the return of Palisades is still on schedule and that Holtec wants to fix and not replace the steam generators, which he said would last for another 30 years after repairs. And why wouldn't we believe him? News of the Atom, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this program. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Deadline Washington Representative Mike Lawler. He's a New York Republican in a tight race for re-election. Apologized for wearing blackface. Speaking of tight races, as part of a Michael Jackson costume when he was in college. A photo of his Halloween costume from 2006, when he was just 20, was published by the New York Times this week. Lawler is wearing a red leather jacket, resembling the one Jackson wears in the Thriller video, and his face has been blackened. He confirmed the authenticity of a photo in a statement to CBS, saying the costume was meant to be, quote, the sincerest form of flattery, a genuine homage to one of my childhood idols. I was a little kid trying to moonwalk through my mom's kitchen. He's out folksing Tim Walz. Continuing the quote, when I'm attempting to imitate Michael's legendary dance moves at a Halloween party in college 18 years ago, the ugly practice of blackface was the furthest thing from my mind. Let me be clear, he says. This is not that. I'm a student of history, and for anyone who takes offense to the photo, I am sorry. All you can do is live and learn, and I appreciate everyone's grace along the way, unquote. The head of a Catholic hospital network in California has issued an apology after the state's attorney general filed a lawsuit claiming Providence St. Joseph Hospital refused emergency care to a pregnant woman whose water broke prematurely at 15 weeks. Quote, "We are heartbroken over the experience this patient had while in our care and reached out to her today in an effort to express our profound apologies," unquote, the chief executive of Providence Northern California Service Area, Gary Olney, in a statement addressed to hospital employees. The lawsuit, filed in court, claims that the hospital in Eureka, we found it, violated several California state laws by allegedly refusing to perform abortive procedures on a patient whom doctors diagnosed with a rare condition, preterm premature rupture of the membranes, PPROM. According to the Attorney General's lawsuit, Nussloch, the patient, was denied treatment by the hospital, which does not perform dilation and evacuation procedures if a heartbeat is detected. Though it has issued an apology to the patient, the hospital has not publicly confirmed whether the detection of a fetal heartbeat was why she was allegedly denied treatment. Olney wrote in the hospital statement that Nussloch's experience was a tragic situation that did not meet our standards for safe, quality, compassionate care, unquote. He said the hospital intends to revisit its training process regarding emergency medical situations. One of Michigan State University's top administrators apologized this week following a news story in a local newspaper, The State, revealing years-old comments that minimized the abuse of disgraced ex-university doctor Larry Nassar. You may remember him. He's the guy who messed with a lot of female gymnasts. Quote, "My words caused harm," said Senior Vice President for Student Life and Engagement, Venny Gore. That's in an email. Quote, "I took responsibility for them and I take responsibility for them now," unquote. Oh, still quoting, "In my role, I'm frequently involved in emotional and difficult conversations. It's my responsibility to communicate effectively," wrote Gore, who oversees the university's student housing and organizations. Continuing the quote, "Sometimes I get it right, and sometimes I don't. That day, I did not get it right." Comments were made during a 2018 meeting with campus workers, according to notes taken of the meeting by the university investigator. Gore said a very large majority of the women did not understand that it was a medical procedure, unquote, referring to Nassar's patients, who, as I say, were repeatedly sexually abused under the guise of medical treatment. He also defended President Luana Simon, who at the time had just resigned over what critics called a mishandling of Nassar that empowered his years of unchecked abuse. A survivor of Nassar's abuse, who left the meeting crying and very upset, reported the incident as she felt Gore had attempted to justify Nassar's actions. In his email this week, Gore pushed back on the characterization. Quote, "I do not justify the actions of Nassar, and my heart continues to go out to those affected," unquote. The comments in question were reported to his supervisors, in 2018. They only became public last month when the investigator's notes and related emails were released. Deadline Seattle, Washington State Patrol has made a $1.3 million payment to a trucker that a State Patrol sergeant falsely accused of causing a crash 2 years ago. The payment and a written apology from Chief John R. Batiste, not the one you're thinking of, settled a potential lawsuit from the commercial truck driver, Sean Fouch of Snohomish. "Not only were you involved in a collision caused by a WSP trooper, a WSP sergeant wrongfully had you charged with an infraction as the causing driver," Batiste said in the letter to Fauci. Continuing, quote, the injuries to your person and your truck were then compounded by the potential harm to your reputation and good standing as a professional driver. Unquote. Batiste said the actions were not only reprehensible, but beneath the standards and expectations of the Washington State Police. Then moving a little south, southeast, Ogden, Utah, the Ogden mayor is pressing pause on paid parking downtown. His decision came after a fiery city meeting last week, where the majority of residents strongly opposed the change, as they would anywhere if they had the chance. At the most recent city council meeting, the mayor announced he's putting any parking changes downtown on pause. He said the city government learned a lot of valuable lessons through this situation. Several business owners left last week's heated paid parking meeting, frustrating about what was coming to their block. The mayor responded with an apology. I'm sorry, said Mayor Ben Nadolski. I'm not comfortable pressing forward without having enough input. Unquote. More input, everybody. Bank of America customers are dealing with a service outage. Online and mobile accounts show $0 balances. By the way, when did free become $0? You know, you got a $0 copayment. No, it's a free one. When did that happen? I missed that meeting. Anyway, the accounts at Bank of America were showing $0 balances, and the customers were taking to social media to gripe about it this week. By the end of the day, the bank said the issue had been resolved. It apologized to its customers. It released the following statement late in the day. Quote, some mobile and online banking clients experienced an issue accessing their accounts and balances information today. These technology issues have been fully resolved. We apologize for any inconvenience. Unquote. The Charlotte-based bank was not processing deposits and is showing inaccurate balance information, according to users on Down Detector. That's a website that provides data about outages. Here's news about an idol that isn't American. A feeling of guilt overwhelmed a thief who gave up a 100-year-old Ashtadhatu idol days after he sold it from a temple in Uttar Pradesh's Prayagraj in India, as he experienced certain side effects after committing the crime, according to police. As it turned out, the thief had left the stolen idol on the side of a highway, and along with it, an apology letter expressing his regret over stealing it. According to the police, a 100-year-old Ashtadhatu idol was stolen from the Ram Janaki Temple on September 23. The incident was reported to the cops by temple authorities. The priest of the temple was so traumatized by the theft, he went ahead and started an indefinite fast in protest. Exactly 10 days after the theft was reported, passers-by found the idol inside a sack on the link road of a national highway. The people then took it, the idol, to the local ashram, and when the sack was opened, a letter was also found with the idol. It was written by the thief, who apologized for his deed and expressed regret over the theft. I have made a big mistake, he said in the letter. Due to my ignorance, I stole the idol. Since then, I have been having bad dreams, and my son's health has also deteriorated. I've done something really very wrong for some money. I'm leaving the idol, apologizing for my mistake. I request you to forgive me and get the idol placed back in temple. Its shape has been changed to hide its identity. Forgive our children and accept your idol. Unquote. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Before I wrap things up, just a note on Crypto Winter. A crypto whale, I think that's a large investor in crypto. They got so much lingo. That's what you're paying for. Crypto whale has lost over $32 million worth of Spark-wrapped Ether tokens after apparently signing a malicious transaction. This was first spotted by Scam Sniffer. Yeah, why would they need that? This is from a publication called The Block. The exploit was seemingly powered by the infamous Inferno Drainer Scam as a Service software, which targets crypto traders by spoofing popular protocols in order to trick users into signing over control of their wallets. It sounds so futuristic, doesn't it? The Inferno Drainer has stolen over $215 million from over 200,000 victims during its lifetime, according to an analytics dashboard built by Scam Sniffer. Inferno's operators reportedly take a 20% commission on stolen tokens. The service was originally shut down by its developers in November of last year. It made a return in May of this year, calling the service better than ever with new staff, new ways to work, new support, and new features. The scam service claims to support 28 different blockchains and hundreds of different decentralized finance apps. The identity of the phished individual has yet to be confirmed. Brr! It's a crypto winter. Ladies and gentlemen, just one note about this smart, smart world we're living in. Meta, formerly Facebook, has released some smart glasses. You wear them and you look... No, it's not about you, how you look. They, they show you stuff while you're looking at other stuff. I know it sounds like a great idea, doesn't it? But when asked this week if Meta is using photos taken on those smart glasses to train its AI, company representatives refused to deny or confirm. In an interview with TechCrunch, Meta was asked if it plans to train its AI models on the images taken by customers' smart glasses, the same way it uses photos from Instagram and Facebook accounts. Bet you didn't know that either. Quote, "We're not publicly discussing that," said Anuj Kumar, senior director working on AI wearables. Anything that's called a wearable shouldn't be worn. That's just me. Quote, "That's not something we typically share externally," said a Meta spokesperson. "We're not saying either way." The Meta smart glasses, branded as Ray-Bans, can shoot both 1080 30p video and 12 megapixel still photos. A real-time video update is coming to the glasses, which will stream images into a multimodal AI model. A multimodal AI model, so the glasses can answer questions about what the user is looking at. This will mean the smart glasses will be gathering even more images than ever before, and the user might not be completely aware the device is recording imagery. In private moments, the user might be asking the glasses about an object they're looking at, unaware the images are being saved in a cloud. And of course, it's not a cloud. It's right here on the ground with the rest of us. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations, over your audio device of choice whenever you want it, on radio at the same time. Either way, come along for that ride, won't you? The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, maybe your last chance, I don't know, and playlist of the music heard here on, along with a lot of other things to watch and read and enjoy, all at harryshearer.com. And yes, I'm still on X. At the Harry Shearer. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh here at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of the very same WWNO, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.